This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. It's a beautiful Sunday morning. And actually, it's a lot nicer outside than it is inside here at WNRN. A little hot and sticky in here. All that bluegrass music got everybody dancing in the background, sweating the place up. And Rusty Simpre running from here to there because he's one of the guests today, along with my friend Steve Bullock.
Good morning.
Morning.
We're not on.
You're not on? You should be. You're on now.
Good morning.
Good morning. There we go.
I just sound. There you go. Headphones got turned down. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what you get when you run from one side of the board to the other. Rusty and Steve here doing a show we like to call Auto Chat. Automobile Chat. I believe other phrases of this are taken by others in the radio industry, so we are Automobile Chat. Two guys over 50 years. Have we hit 60 years yet worth of...
Not yet. I'm just at probably right around 23.
Rusty? So.
35.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're almost there.
We're getting there. Over 50 years worth of automobile expertise and how to fix problems with the cars. We'll cover all types of cars and trucks. You got an engine. You got a car. Call us up. We'll be taking calls and questions throughout the day, throughout the hour for Steve Bullock and Rusty Simpre. Rusty at Jim Price Hyundai. Been there for how long?
Oh, my goodness. 17 years? No.
You came to work in 97.
14 years, I'm sorry.
Yeah. 14 years. Steve Bullock has experience at a variety of places around. Currently Culpeper VDOT, is that correct?
And I'm working part-time at Sears Automotive Center.
There you go.
You trust a name in car care. Since 19 what?
Oh, God, I don't even know.
I like the Ron White's version. When he went to Sears to get tires.
I'm not going
to
talk about that.
So 434-979-0919. If you have a question about problems with your car, what to do, how to do it, maybe what you did wrong. Because I think I walked in, I always have friends who ask me, when are you doing the auto mechanic guys on again? I got a problem with my car. Or I'll call them up and say, you know, you got a crappy car, so tell me what some of the problems with it and what Steve and Rusty might be able to help with. So I've got a couple walking in the door. But we'd love to hear you call up with your question for Steve and Rusty as we talk about cars.
I just want to thank Steve for being here on time. Remember what happened last
year? Yeah, last year.
He had a little car trouble last year.
Last year, the auto mechanic expert didn't realize how many gallons of gas were in his car.
Well, that's because, atypically, mechanics don't fix their stuff, and the gas gauge has been broken for years.
All right, so let's jump on. We're talking about somebody who fixed. Let me find Jerry's. There it is. Jerry's from Lake Monticello. Jerry has a 2004 Pontiac Grand Prix, six-cylinder GT1. I don't even know what that is. He sent that to me. And I replaced. Jerry replaced the transmission himself. But now the gauges don't work all the time, and it clicks several times before it starts.
Sounds like he missed a ground.
Ground wire somewhere.
Yeah, that thing has got a ground that's on the front side of the case there.
It's when it comes off the battery and goes to the body, too.
Yep, that
will affect it.
Everything. I mean, it'll make it do all kinds of weird stuff like what he's talking about.
But how do you get your transmission to, and again, okay, car dork, over here on this side, or that's not even the right phrase, because car dork is somebody who's heavily involved. Car know-nothing guy over here, I always reach out to Rusty Simpre.
Yeah.
But if you have, and Jerry, sorry, man, if you have the knowledge to repair the transmission yourself, and the email he sent me says nothing about his car running roughly, how do you not know to do the ground wire or whatever you're talking about?
It's easy because it's probably buried underneath that breather box somewhere where the air filter is.
That one is on that particular transmission is exactly where he said it is. It goes underneath the air box, which is over on that side, And everything about that whole area of the car is really a pain in the butt.
There's a lot of wires over there.
And it's easy to overlook it. I've done it before, and it's just one of those things. As soon as you see what's going on, it's like, know exactly what I did. Because it's like the bolt that holds it into the block has actually got a stud on the end of it, and then it's got another nut that goes
it's
on the other side.
Probably six ground wires on
it's,
that.
It's
and
exactly
one of them's
what
just
it
loose.
Is. It's what they call a ground comb sometimes. It's got like five or six grounds on one wire and then one big ground. And that's for the actual starting system. Like I say, it's one of those things. It's easy to do, especially on something that's a big job. And if he did it on the ground, kudos to him. That's a big job and a pain in the butt.
I did one on Miss Tromley's car.
Oh man!
And yes, it was all day affair. Yeah, even with a lift.
Yeah, easily an all day affair. I think it pays between I want to say it's like 11-12 hours.
11-12 hours, yeah.
But, and it takes every bit about 7 or 8.
But it was a Jerry Rick. That's who it was.
Yeah, Jerry lives in Lake Monticello.
Yeah, the fix is just pull that breather box out and trace that harness, you know, from the battery or where the harness comes from the actual engine control module and from the inside the car. It'll just be a big harness and any little wire that comes out that's got an eyelet on it that needs to be
attached
with a bolt and nut somehow to get a good ground back in that into the dash and.
All right, Jerry, I don't know if you're listening at the moment, but you can always pick up the podcast here, SeavillePodcast.com. Brandon, producing the show today, will make sure that gets up. Or you can even go to WNRN.org and find the podcast as well. Again, our guest today, over 50 years worth of auto mechanic experience, Steve Bullock and Rusty Simpre. That's right, Rusty Simpre, running around from bluegrass to his paying job. So, guys, you're welcome to call in with your questions or comments. 434-979-0919. Ask your question about your car or your family car, your son or daughter's car, or anything you'd like to these guys who know their stuff. Hey, a couple questions of mine as we go along is... So part of the conversation I had with Jerry was me asking, gosh, you know, how do you do that? And the length of time, you guys even mentioned the length of time. He was saying how it was not his daily car, so he could do it over the course of several different weekends, I think. And we got into the conversation about original versus aftermarket used parts.
Well, I mean... The aftermarket world, it's coming to a point where if anything is older than 10 years old, that's about all you have. Because manufacturers don't usually carry parts for unless it's something that they made a lot of or are currently still making. As far as what you're always going to run into being a better part, it's always going to be a factory part, in my opinion. Some people will tell you different and feel different about it, but you know, they are the ones who manufacture the vehicle. They're the ones that have all the specifications. But when they're not
supposedly available. They do more testing as well.
Correct.
don't get me started on the GM ignition switches. We should discuss that a little bit.
Do you really want to go back?
I'll mark that down for a little bit later.
Those guys are in trouble.
That's a botched deal all the way around because they were having problems with that when I was working for the dealer then, and that's been better than 10 years ago.
That's people's points. They've been hiding it, covering it, trying to.
Well,
I'm
not going to say they're hiding it. What I'd say is that they ignored it.
Right.
They thought that the problem would go away.
Well, how does that work on the for someone who is a mechanic for a GM business? Now, what we've been told is that the people, the higher ups, and the engineers at GM knew about it and didn't. Say anything.
Yeah, now 15 people dead.
But if you're a mechanic,
they're expecting 50 to be killed.
And again, I'm not. I don't want to blame. I want to find out more about it. I'm not looking to blame anybody who works at a GM dealership. But at what point does the car technician notice it and say something about it? And I'm assuming that it has to go up the ladder. You just don't put an ad in the paper from your local GM dealership saying. By the way, everybody, we found this at the Charlottesville GM guys. But how does that work?
Well, there was at one time, and I'm not like I say I've been out of the dealer system for about 2.5 years. At one time, there was an actual place where you could go to and you emailed any issues you had with something as far as finding problems with, say, something with the service manual, because they did have misprints in the service manual and you would find them. I was actually involved with one on a 3.8 liter that there was an issue with the sealing surfaces on the oil pan into the block. The gasket only had rubber on one side to seal it to the block, and what they neglected to tell anybody was that you needed to use their silicone sealer on one side of the gasket. But when you look at the gasket, you don't even think about it because you would say it's a gasket, it should seal no matter what. But on this particular model, you had to have an actual silicone sealer on one side of the gasket to make it seal properly. And nowhere in the service manual was that found, and it wasn't until I started calling the tech line that we found that out. Now, that same area where you would basically email it to an engineer or whoever in the higher ups, basically, if you found any issues that you saw were being an issue or something that you could see be corrected or needed to be corrected, I believe that was the place to do it. But a lot of times when you're in the industry, you really don't have time to really think about it or look at it in that way. You can just say, oh, yeah, we've got a problem. And all we're going to do is make the repair. Usually when it's something that comes through, especially on warranty claims, it'll keep on showing up and showing up and showing up. And hopefully somebody in the higher up will say, hey, we need to investigate this.
Right. That's how it works now. The only calls that the manufacturer gets is like calls under warranty to the technical assistance line, so they keep track of how many cases of these things are bad, and then they look into it. So the cars that are out of warranty, those people, I mean, they'll never
know. And that's the whole thing.
Unless they actually buy their parts from a GM dealer.
Correct.
Then I'm sure they're going to say, wow, you know, Charlottesville sold 30 of these parts, you know, in a month. What's the deal? Or that part becomes back ordered, and then they start investigating
that. And that's the other thing, too, what a lot of people don't realize is that if you're dealing with any, and this is any manufacturer across the board, I don't care who it is, and I've worked on everything from A to Z at this point. If you call a manufacturer for something you think is that the most obscure thing that they shouldn't have, and just for instance, like, you know, a module for the turbocharger, just for something like that on a big truck, something that usually never ever goes bad, and they say, oh, we got it. The second they tell you that on something that you wouldn't think that anybody would have, okay, they got a problem.
That usually means they have problems.
Because it's in stock, it means that it's a part that's readily used
and been sold
a lot of. And that's the way all these manufacturers are now and all the dealerships are. And well, anybody, they keep parts in stock they know they're going to sell. If it's something that they don't sell all the time, they're not even going to keep it in stock, and that includes brake parts. And that's what's funny is that's the one thing you know you're going to sell, but if they don't sell a lot of them, they won't stock them because they say, well, what's the point? It's a space being used and inventory and money being out. So they're just like, hey, we're not going to keep it in stock. But when you call a place for something you think like a spring for a door, and they say, oh, yeah, we got that, well, that means they break all the time. So
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Getting back to this ignition switch recall.
Go ahead.
Their first concern was if you have too many keys on your key ring, you know, it can pop back into the accessory position, right? That's what's cutting the car off.
Back to
the accessory position. But tell me why, even in the accessory position, and this one kid hit a tree and got killed, and why didn't his airbag deploy?
Okay, first and foremost,
that module's supposed to have backup power.
No, that module doesn't work that way. I didn't see how the accident happened, and the way that module works is that in order for an airbag to deploy, the front airbag sensors, and there's three of them. You have two in the front and one in the center for the inertia. These things have to see a crash event within milliseconds of each other for an airbag deployment to go in, and that is in a frontal collision. That is not in a rear collision or side collision unless this thing is stipulated to have side collision airbags. Now, I don't know what all the parameters were in that particular vehicle.
Right.
Not every car was equipped with side impact airbags. Now, that's a whole different ballgame because that's where you're getting into a whole bunch of different sensors all around the car. And these things all have to see an event of an impact. On average, if I remember this right, and don't hold me to this, I want to say the impact had to be greater than 30 miles an hour.
Deceleration rate, not a speed rate. It's how quick you decelerate. In other words, hitting a tree or a wall.
Caller, hang on just a sec.
I just want to know, aren't the airbags, well, they make us unplug the battery for 5 minutes before we're allowed to tamper with the airbag because it supposedly has backup power. So,
well,
these cars are not deploying. Well, I don't want to get into specifics on frontal side impact, any of that, but
Well, the whole thing is it all depends on
I feel that's another issue.
That's another issue that they'd have to go into there, and that's something that the engineers could actually go into and see what happened. With the scan tools that we had available at that time, we didn't have that ability to see what the event took place. We could see the freeze frame data if there was a code involved, but as far as what happened, we could not see what was going on when the impact happened.
All right, let's take this call. Terry, are you with us?
I sure am.
You got a question for these guys?
Certainly. I have a 1996 Honda Accord, and the issue is the clutch. The clutch was low, so I visited a repair shop that had been recommended. They seemed reputable, suggested it could be the clutch, master cylinder, and a number of other things. I felt confident, took the car to them. Paid them about $2,300 at the end where they said they'd replaced everything. And less than 4 weeks later, I turned off a main road onto a secondary road. There was no clutch with which to shift. I jerked to this abrupt stop. I found the clutch was like mesh with the floor. I pulled it up with my hand, pushed down on it again, and it snapped like a mouse trap. I pulled it up again, touched it with my finger again. It snapped down onto the floor like a mouse trap. I called the towing company. It took the car back to the place, incidentally, which had a warranty. Said, "Oh yeah, we guarantee our things." And they kept it for a week. Called me and said, "We have found nothing wrong with it. Come and get your car." I said, "Nothing wrong with it. This clutch was on the floor, and it snaps down like a mousetrap." They said, "We have found nothing wrong with it." Now, how the clutch got up and stayed up for them but didn't for me, I'm still wondering. So I went and got the car. And 3 weeks after that, I got up to the top of States Farm Boulevard one night about 10:30 with my family in the car, and by golly, if it didn't do it again. No clutch. It was on the floor. I pulled it up, just touched it, and it snapped like a mouse trap. Obviously, I couldn't shift. Again, I called the tow truck. They have had the car now for a month. They called me and said, "It's ready. We cannot find anything." And I said, "Listen, to me, it's a death trap. I can see myself going up and down a mountain, and, you know, suddenly there's no clutch. Am I going to go backward and fall off the cliff, or am I going to go forward to the next curve and fall off the cliff, never to be seen again?" These people insist. Now they said, "Well, we found a slight leak in a hose, and I think it was between the master cylinder and the reservoir." And they say, "It's fixed. It's okay. We can find nothing wrong. They've had it for a month." I suggested that they take it out, have their wife and, you know, drive the car, take the kids to church, you know, their mother, father, favorite aunt, whatever, a few neighbor kids. And they said, "Oh, yeah, we've got the point." But I said, "Essentially, you're telling me that this car is fixed, and I think it's a death trap. And ethically, I couldn't even sell a car feeling that there was something wrong with this clutch.
Hey, Rusty,
can you help?"
Steve, what you got? What do you have for Terry?
My first thing is clutch master cylinder.
Or the slave.
It's unlikely that it would get air in it, and then the air goes away and starts working fine. But
yeah.
I've had clutch master cylinders where they put this cylinder together. It's a piston with rubber seals on it, and I've had them where the manufacturer will put either the wrong kind of grease or too much grease lube on those seals that go on the piston, and it won't actually push the fluid down through the line to actually operate the clutch. What the difference between you and them probably is, I've had this on some 2009 Hyundai Sonatas as well, if you're just barely putting light pressure on that clutch pedal, it will just go right to the floor, and the spring pressure on the pedal, actually that's what's making it snap down the floor, because there's no hydraulic pressure that you're pushing. When the mechanic gets in there, his big foot, he's probably, you know, shoving it down pretty firmly and getting aggressive with it, And that's usually all it takes to make that clutch work like it's supposed to. I've run into that on numerous vehicles, but
yeah, that
if the part's under warranty, if they put a clutch master cylinder on it, that's the first thing I would do.
Yeah,
stick
I would
another clutch master.
Well, I would go as far as telling them to replace them both, the clutch and the slave, because the slave cylinder can do the same thing.
That's true.
Because they're essentially the same thing. On the master side, it's where you're pushing in, and on the slave side, it's where it's pushing out. But the inside, the internals of these things are essentially the same. It's just the pressure is going from one side to the other.
You're losing hydraulic pressure from your foot.
And if there was a leak in there, I can see air in the system doing that, and that could happen on there. But that's one of those things that, like I say, I would almost have to probably. What I would do is I would have you drive it with me in it, and see if we can't make it happen. That's what I would suggest doing.
You're going in the right direction though by asking them to drive it.
Yeah, make sure that they're driving it. If they're going to sign off on it and let it go, I mean, you know, tell them, say it's all on them. I mean, you know, because they're the ones who are doing the work and they're the ones that are telling you that, you know, the vehicle is fixed. Make sure that they're willing, you know, to stand behind what they're saying. But me personally, if I was to be working on the car, I would probably replace both the slave master and the line just to cover it. And be sure.
Yeah, the parts people will give them new parts, and they just send it back in.
They just send it back in as a defect.
As a defect. So.
Okay, so replace the slave master.
Yeah, the slave cylinder and the master cylinder and that brake line, or it's the clutch line. It's basically a brake hose. If that's even collapsed, if they didn't replace that and that line is collapsed, I've seen them do some weird stuff too, because it is a rubber line.
That's true.
And if the internals of that have collapsed, like on a brake line, you can get them to where they'll hold fluid only on one side.
That's something that might change with temperature, too.
Yeah, that could be anything. And it can even also be in situations on how hard you hit the pedal, because I've seen where you drive brake hoses, if you drive them normal, it's not a problem. It's when you do like a panic stop with them where you put hard pressure on them, that one side will stick when you go to release it, and you'll have a pull after you've hit the brake. Because one side's still holding pressure.
So Terry should replace the slave cylinder.
Anything in the hydraulic clutch.
I'd replace basically the whole hydraulic system.
The hydraulic system.
Get one of the guys in the car with her while she drives it.
Yes.
Safely around around a parking lot with no other cars in it. Terry.
Well, yeah. Well, that's just what you do whenever you these situations. These are the kind of situations I hate to deal with, because it's one of those things. You know, I always believe what the customer says, because I've seen too many things out there that have happened that are just there's no way to deny that what they're saying doesn't happen.
They couldn't make that up.
It's just, you know, it's like that kind of deal. And it's one of those things where you have to go with what the customer says, and you just have to keep on trying. And that's why I always like to get the customers involved. If I can't make it happen, you know, with what I do in my diagnosis, the first thing that comes out of my mouth, I want the customer to drive it with me in it and see if we can make this thing act up.
It looks different on the lift than it does on the ground, right?
Well, I'm not going to drive the way she does. Everybody drives different. Everybody's got a different way they touch a clutch. Some people heel and toe. Some people are off the floor. It all depends on what the driving parameters are that person puts the car through. I'm not going to drive it the same way no matter what it is. So, I mean, that would be my suggestion to see, and, you know, and if you, at that point, that's the only way you're going to get any kind of real confidence with the car that I can see.
Okay. Right.
Terry, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Good
I
luck.
Really
All right, good
your
luck.
Help. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
All right, there's Terry calling in with her car issues. You're welcome to call in with yours. It is Sunday morning wake-up call. Rick Moore with Rusty Simpre and Steve Bullock. 1122.
WNRN thanks the following for their support of independent music radio.
T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC certified printing. T&N Printing can be reached at t-nprinting.com.
Family-owned and operated Spring Valley Orchard in Afton, where pick-your-own sweet cherries are now in season for only a few weeks. The cherries are ripe, and the Childs family invites you to take your pick. You can learn more at springvalleyorchard.com or on the Spring Valley Orchard Facebook page.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel.
You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for being here with us today on a beautiful June Sunday. This is 91.9 and Harrisonburg's 95.1. Steve Bullock, Rusty Simpre, over 50 years worth of auto technician, car mechanic experience. Terry, I hope these guys helped you. If you would like Rusty and Steve to help you, it's 434-979-0919. That's 434-979-0919. Let me throw this one out to you again. I told you I walked in and had some friends. KO, please ask the guys this. And I see a call coming in, so let's be quick for Wayne from Nelson County. Tells me my 2008 Hyundai Tucson's reverse lights are coming on when the car is driving forward. It's a manual transmission, if that matters.
Yes, it does, and I would definitely say he needs a backup light switch. It's just plain shorted, or somehow the terminals are touching together.
That the reverse lights can come on?
Yes.
When you're going forward?
Yes.
It just seems so odd.
I'll put a clutch in Steve Hamilton, our host of New Blues, fresh, and same thing happened to his. Went to drive it out. Went to drive it out to shop. The backup lights were staying on, so it just unplugged the switch.
I don't know. I don't know Wayne's skills.
It screws right down by the breather box. It screws right in the top of the transmission. Takes a 24 millimeter deep socket or a 15/16 deep socket, and you can just unscrew it and screw a new one in.
Right.
Cost of the switch probably $12-15. They're not bad, but
good enough. Wayne, I hope you find that helpful.
To keep from getting a ticket, just you can reach down there, squeeze a little tab, and unplug the switch, though, and
you can get a ticket for that?
Going down the road with your backup lights on, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So unplug the switch until you can fix it. So.
All right. We got Linda on. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm having a great day. Thanks for calling. Your car trouble for Steve and Rusty?
Yeah. I just purchased a 2005 Subaru wagon. And my dog's so barking. Sorry. A 2005 Subaru wagon. Just bought it from a dealership. And because it has over 100,000 miles on it, I purchased it as is without a warranty. All right. I've only had it for a week. And now just yesterday when I was driving it, and it is an automatic, when it changes down into first gear, there's a really hard clunk. So I'm just wondering now if there's something happening to the transmission, and I'm, you know, I don't have a warranty on the car.
The best thing I could tell you to do on that is have the transmission serviced. And that's just simply a drain and fill on that particular vehicle. There are certain places you can do, like it's like a fluid transfusion. That wouldn't even hurt on it unless that fluid is slam, you know, black. At that point, I would be afraid to do a transfusion on it, because I've seen them fail when you start putting good fluid in there, because you basically wash all the material out of the transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Drain and fills at that mileage would probably be the safest thing to do.
Drain
and fill on the transmission. I mean, the only filter that thing has in it is really a screen.
Okay.
Some of them had a screw-on filter, and I can't remember if it was 2005 when they started it or not.
Does it actually jerk, like it's shifting real hard into low gear?
Yeah.
Or is it just a noise you're hearing?
It's kind of a jerk, plus it's just the clunking noise, and it jerks a little.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, you know, normally when it would go down to first gear, it would be just a smooth transition. But now it's got, you know, that clunking and a little bit of a jerk.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, is you might want to, those things were notorious for half shaft problems, too. And so you may actually have a half shaft boot that's busted on it.
Do you hear any clicking noises going around turns?
No.
Okay.
No.
Like I say, they had...
Is that good or bad that she doesn't hear
that's
that?
That's good.
That's good. That means that it's more than likely not a half. Yeah, that's not a half.
I always like to know whether I should take a deep breath and clean my credit card off or do a little dance.
Another question, is it an all-wheel drive?
If it's Subaru, yeah.
It's an all-wheel drive.
They made front-wheel drive ones as well, though.
Back in the day.
Yeah, okay. This is a Subaru Outback LL Bean.
Yeah, they haven't made a two-wheel drive in probably decades. Everything they do is all-wheel drive.
Rusty showing his age as a car mechanic.
No.
Okay, so you don't think that it's a real bad transmission problem?
Those things, when they have, but you don't feel any kind of slipping or anything as you take off. Like any kind of lag when you hit the throttle and it takes off. It doesn't seem like it's not moving.
No, haven't had that problem yet.
All right. The other thing is too is that these things, unfortunately, they are notorious for oil leaks. There might be oil everywhere. You might have a bad mount.
Okay, so I park in a garage, so I should back out of the garage and see if there's a puddle or
See, if you've had it this long and you're backing out of the garage, you know it. These things when they leak oil, it's pretty bad.
Okay, well, I've only had it just over a week.
Okay. Approximately how many miles are on this thing?
106,000.
Has it had its timing belt done?
They told me that it has a timing chain.
Oh, it's a six-cylinder.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that bad?
No, actually the six-cylinders were the better models in those years. They had piles of power, and they ran a whole lot better. The other thing this car could be doing is that this transmission does have what they call an electronic shift adapt, and it may be learning how you drive. Okay, and I know that sounds funny, but these transmissions will, and this is just about everything manufactured now that's electronic, they will actually learn your driving habits.
Okay,
and
that's weird.
And it may be what you're experiencing is it's going through that transition of learning.
Can you reset it by undoing the battery on a Subaru?
You can do that, but you have to take both terminals loose and connect them together. But when you reset this thing, it's going to try and learn all over again, and it may do the same thing.
Uh-huh. And it also has the it's where you could do the gears yourself, even though it isn't automatic.
Yeah, that the shift on the fly.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So I've done that a few times, you know, just playing around with it to
see how
that works good if I do it myself. I don't hear any clunking or dragging or anything.
Like I say, it's one of those things that, you know, it sounds like it sounds like it could be one. It might just need to have the fluid change in it. It may fix the whole problem.
Okay.
Or reset the adaptive learning.
Yeah, which is just a matter of basically taking both cables loose and, you know, you connect them together, not with the battery hooked up at all, but have just the cables loose, and you take a jumper between the cables and let them sit like that for 15 minutes. That's something that I would recommend having a technician do because you don't want to, you know, burn anything up.
Right. Okay.
But like I say, it's one of those things that could be just simply a matter of service, or it could be just simply it's learning how you drive.
Huh. Okay.
It may not be anything wrong with it. Like I say, these cars, they're pretty solid.
All right,
that's
Linda.
That's what everybody says.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
All right. Bye. So there's Linda. You know, quick question. The phone lines are open, boys and girls, 434-979-0919. If you're buying a used car from a legitimate dealer, shouldn't they have put fresh fluids in it already?
That's why it was sold as is.
Yeah, because they were too lazy to do it.
It wasn't worth the dealership putting any money into the car.
Linda is not here, and I don't.
Yes, she
is. I don't like to do that by saying, "Oh, let's complain about the company you got it from," because that's not fair to the company. But I mean, goodness gracious, couldn't you have charged $50 more to put new fluids in it? And
it's probably more than that if you get into servicing and all that stuff like that. You're talking about it could be easily $100, $120 by the time it's all said and done. Fluid has gotten stupid here as of lately. It's a petroleum product, and like everything, it's gone up in price.
We sell cars like that as well, Rick. And it's called a handyman special. We hand the customer a list. Hey, here's everything that's wrong with this car. Yeah.
We're not
putting money in it. So.
Call from Dewey. Dewey, you got a question for the guys.
Yes, I do. 98. I've called you cats before, man. I've got a 98 V70R Volvo. My speedometer is starting to mess up. I can just turn my key just a bit, and it will come back on. I've been told that it is possibly an ABS situation, but the ABS has been out in this car for years, and any ideas?
Unfortunately, the best thing I can tell you is that you're going to have to get it to somebody that's got the scan tool for reading it and seeing what's going on with the data stream, and it could be something as simple as the cluster itself. And if the ABS is out, everything, all your speed sensors and everything run through that module. It could be finally that it's just giving up the ghost and not allowing any data to come through to the speedo head. That's going to be one of those things where they're actually going to have to get in with a scan tool and start looking at the data to what's coming in and what's potentially going out. But with the ABS module being bad, and they all did it, every one of them.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, I put a lot in over the years. And
what is the cost of
That thing I want to say was between $1,200 and $1,500 installed.
Wow. You're talking about the ABS module?
Yes, sir.
And
I think the cluster is about $800 to $1,000, if I remember right.
And do they both have to be programmed?
Yes.
Oh, joy.
Oh, well, the ABS module, it was a toss-up. Some were plug-and-play, which meant you just put it on the car and let it go, and others had to be programmed. But almost all the speedo heads, from what I remember of them, had to be programmed. And, you know, there's several places out there in the area. There isn't just, you know, you don't have to go to the dealer. There is Edgecombs. They do have the ability to do that kind of stuff.
Well, that's good tip. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Dewey.
Thanks, Dewey.
Good hearing from you.
Bye, right, folks.
Take it easy and good luck.
All right, 11:34 here on the Wake Up Call, 434-979-0919. Your question for our guys during auto chat.
Support today for WNRN comes from
Foods of All Nations, Charlottesville's local grocery store with wine section, coffee bar, ice cream, and bakery. Foods of All Nations Ramen and International Hot Food Bar is open for lunch every weekday. From the esoteric to everyday grocery needs, it's Foods of All Nations on Ivy Road and foodsofallnations.com.
Paragon Day Spa, the down-to-earth spa. Paragon Day Spa offers massage, facials, electrolysis, waxing, and natural nails. Paragon Day Spa takes an all-natural approach where the focus is on you and offers skincare and day spa services. For more information, ParagonDaySpa.com. Paragon Day Spa, 1706 Emmett Street, Charlottesville.
Hello, I'm Terry Kent from Better World Betty, and you are invited to the Better Business Challenge Awards Night on June 19th at the Paramount Theater from 5:30 to 8 p.m. This Oscar-style event recognizes the nearly 80 local businesses, schools, and churches that have stepped up and made a deeper commitment to sustainability. In addition to awarding this year's champions and top innovators, the night will include hors d'oeuvres, beverages, live music from Downbeat Project, fun door prizes, and more. Food and drink are included in your ticket price. All members of the community are invited. You can purchase your tickets at the Paramount box office. I'm Terry Kent, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And here we are on Sunday, having our little version of Automobile Chat. Call up and ask our guys, Steve Bullock and Rusty Sempre, about problems with your car. And you can do that like Jimmy is now. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You got a question for the boys?
Yeah, I got a 1992 Chevrolet Caprice with a 5.7 motor. Long as I'm going down the road, everything is running fine. But when I get ready to stop, it wants to cut off pretty much every time. And sometimes at a low speed, around 10 or 15 miles an hour, it'll cut off just going down the road. You know, just cut off. But if I put it in neutral, she'll crank back up every time.
EGR valve stuck.
It's either the EGR valve is stuck or you got a major vacuum. The brake pedal doesn't get hard, does it? Like it's real hard to push?
No. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Weren't they good for throttle body gaskets too?
The throttle body gaskets, they were also notorious for getting all carboned up in the intake and in there where you used
crack
to put the top. Yeah. You used to have all kinds of dumb stuff in there. But running down the road, it does fine.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It could even be a PCV valve is open.
Yeah, that would still create a vacuum leak, but I'm thinking EGR valve.
Yeah, they and
were they electric on 92?
No, they were still vacuum? They were still vacuum actuated, which it may or may not throw a check engine light.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, it does. It does. Is the check engine light on?
No.
Okay. Yeah, like I say, if the EGR valve itself is stuck open, and that's that big round-looking thing off to the side, if I remember right, it's on the back side of that engine.
Back side of the throttle body.
Yeah, yeah, on that particular model. And it just looks like a big, it looks like a flying saucer with a vacuum line going into it.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And what you might want to do is take that loose and see if it's actually stuck open. Because what that is when it's at idle and you've got all that exhaust gas flowing back in there, it'll make it cut out and stall.
Yes, every time.
All right. Somebody said, if I remember correctly, you can, like, push your finger up inside that thing, and if it pushes up and comes back down, it's working good, or if it's...
Well, it says it's free. It doesn't necessarily mean it works. What you have to do to make sure it works is you actually put what they call a handheld vacuum pump on it, and you draw a vacuum on the actual EGR valve itself, and if it's working, it'll hold a vacuum and it'll actually move. But if you are squeezing on this thing and it's not building any vacuum, it means that the diaphragm has got a leak in it and it's not working at all.
And just because you can squeeze it doesn't mean that it's not closing all the way.
Right.
It could still be partially opened, which is enough to make the engine stall.
And if it's not working, if it were to be closed, it really wouldn't make any difference in how the engine runs, honestly. It's more of an emission thing to help keep out and get the exhaust gases at the temperatures they need to be.
I believe if there was some kind of way that you could set the island up just a little bit on it, it wouldn't have any problems at all, would it?
The problem with doing that is that that thing is all electronic.
Right.
They used to have, on some of those throttle bodies, they had a knockout in them, but I'll be honest with you, and the 23 years I've been working on cars, I have never adjusted the idle on any of those electronic throttle units.
If you do, you're going to throw your throttle position sensor.
It throws everything
base
off.
Idle off, then you'll be getting check engine lights. And
It'll
could affect your
stuff.
Transmission shifts. It's going to affect some other stuff. But
so eject to EGR valve.
And even, and if I, and how many, this thing ain't got a ton of miles on it, does it?
It's got 160.
Okay, that's not what I would call a ton of miles. These things, when they got over 300,000 miles on them, the actual throttle bodies would actually wear out, and they'd actually have vacuum leaks through the shaft on them like they used to do in the old carburetors, and they can cause them to do some dumb stuff like that. The other thing that could be bad is that one also has an idle air control that sits
on
the side.
That's what I was going to ask you, too.
And
I'll tell you, I do hear air leak up underneath my dash, like a vacuum line might be off or something. I don't know if this guy anything.
Does it sound like it's underneath the steering wheel?
It's up underneath the dash. I don't know exactly where, but I can hear it like blowing air or whatever, or sucking air maybe.
Yeah, if you've got, see, that this is also, the symptoms you're describing are also typical for a vacuum leak. That's why I was asking if the brake pedal seemed like it was getting hard, because the booster, if it goes bad, can do that. But the booster can still work and leak on the inside, and it'll sound like it's about right underneath the center of the dash where the steering wheel is. That thing also, all the controls on that thing for your heating and air conditioning, all of those are vacuum actuated, and those things used to leak too.
Right. I think that's kind of messed up because I got air blowing out where the heat's supposed to come out down on the floor.
There you go.
There's your issue right there. You've got a definite vacuum leak.
Leak behind your heater control, or else down in the floorboard area where some of those actuators are that work the doors.
Right.
So you ought to be able to, you slide the radio out and then the heater control comes out.
That one, I think you can actually see it if you get up underneath the dash.
I think so too.
Okay.
We'll just lay on the floor and listen for that hissing noise, and you'll be able to put your finger on it. And
hopefully find it. And hopefully that'll solve your issue.
Oh, that'd be great.
Cool.
All right.
Hey, thanks for y'all's time, man. Y'all have a great day.
You too. Thanks for calling.
Good luck.
All right, Jimmy. Best of luck, man. Again, here we are on WNRN. This is the Sunday morning wake-up call. Got our guests in here, Rusty Simpre and Steve Bullock, over 60 years. And we decided 50 years,
50.
Making you guys
Stop
older
it.
Than you are.
Stop it, Ricky.
I may look that old, but I'm not that old.
Over 50 years worth of utter technician experience. Call up like Jimmy or Linda and ask a question of these gentlemen. 434-979-0919. Karen sent me in. Karen sent me a message. Karen lives in Albemarle. Her radio stays on even after she cuts the car off, her Jetta. Why is that happening? And as long as she turns the radio off, is that battery okay?
That's WNRN doing that to her. We don't want her to turn the radio off. So that's on our end.
That's a Jetta. It's probably got a bad ignition switch.
Yeah, don't you have to take the key out of them to get it to cut off?
Some of them do, but those things.
If that little tab in there doesn't release all the way, it's going to...
Yeah, and the ignition switches go bad in them because usually what happens on them is nothing works. It'll start the car and none of the dash works.
Wow.
That's usually what you see, and this could be the exact same thing, or it could be... It's got to be getting power from an ignition source because that's how that system works, unless it's getting it over from the clock radio.
Can you spray a little graphite down in that cylinder and
I don't
key
think
in
matter.
And out a couple times? You don't think that'll free
no,
it up?
No, it's German. They make their stuff. When it's done, it's done. The redundancy behind it is over with.
I'm trying to help.
Right, I know. It'd be nice if that worked.
So that sounds like a more expensive repair job than just remember to turn the radio off and hope that all will be okay.
Well, hopefully that's all that it's drawing off of is the radio. I mean, because those things used to run a whole lot of stuff in the car. But it could be just a bad radio, too, because it depends on how they get their power in there. And they're just like everything else. There's circuit boards and anything. So it could be just it's reading through the wrong source of power.
All right, Karen. So Karen can come down here about 11:10 on Sunday. She'll catch Rusty, and he'll go outside.
I would just jam the key in and out of the switch a bunch of times next time it does it and then see if the radio pops off when the key comes out. Just exercise that cylinder a little bit and see if it makes a difference.
All right.
If it does cut off after you do that, then the switch is definitely bad. So.
This is WNRN. It's 11:45. A reminder, you can head to WNRN.org under the Features tab for WNRN's Concert Connection. You'll find the shows from Richmond to Harrisonburg and Lynchburg to Charlottesville. All the concerts in one place. A comprehensive schedule of live music for you at WNRN.org. Check it out. And don't forget, you can also see our old podcasts here on the Wake Up Call at WNRN.org. So let's take a call from Jamie. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
I'm all right. Question for the guys.
I just had a comment for the guy that his car kept cutting off. One thing that we've run into with a Toyota van is the mass airflow sensor getting dust in between the wires on the mass airflow sensor, and pretty much any time you let off the throttle, it will shut the engine off. And that was one thing that I thought they would address also was the possibility of mass airflow sensor.
The 92 Caprice doesn't have a mass airflow
sensor.
That's
why we didn't address it. They didn't start that.
This old throttle body car.
Yeah, they didn't start that in that particular body until 1994. The only reason I know that is I have one.
Very good. I thought he said 2002.
No, sir.
All right. But thanks, Jamie. And that's kind of what we're doing here is if you've had the experience before – call up.
That is true about the Toyotas.
They were notorious. Well, it's not just them. It's any manufacturer out there because, believe it or not, you know you got a good air filter in the car, dirt does get through. And like what he's talking about,
road grime gets on the mass airflow sensor.
And like what he said, that you come up with some running issues with certain cars, and that's exactly what it is. And they used to make this stuff, I think it was from... It was electronic parts cleaners, what they called it.
CRC makes
it. That's what it was.
I use it every week. It's good
stuff.
You
spray that stuff off, and it was like you had a brand new car running. It was unbelievable in some of these cars.
That works on Fords, Toyotas.
It works on anything with a mass airflow, just like what he said.
Right, and we know that there's somebody listening who has a similar issue to Jimmy, who Jamie's comments got us talking about this, who Jamie helped. So thanks for the call, Jamie. 434-979-0919. And we'll take a call. I can't read Brandon's handwriting. Who am I speaking with? Hello, hello?
Hello?
Yes? Who are we talking to?
This is Lorene.
Lorene, do you have a question?
I have a 2002 Chevrolet Avalanche. And the ABS and the brake lights keep coming on after I drive maybe for half an hour or so. and then they just stay on. It's
yeah, that is probably the ABS module, the control module on that unit.
Is that something that's dangerous or needs
It is and it isn't.
Brakes.
Yeah. The problem you have with it is when that red light comes on, the red brake light, it no mm-hmm. longer passes inspection, even though the brakes are actually working in hydraulic mode.
Mm-hmm.
But that code would have to be scanned, but I'm going by experience 9 times out of 10. It's the ABS module on that, and that particular unit is about $1,000.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that's as long as it can come off of the other piece that it's on, which is called, it's basically the control box that has the motors and everything in it. This piece is just the brain box of it.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it separates from that, that's what it costs. If it doesn't separate from that, the price gets very expensive.
Hmm. All right.
Well, okay. Steve, you just ruined Laureen's day.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, definitely did. I mean, if the whole thing is bad, if it's part of it, it's like $1,000. But if the whole thing, then
it's exponential.
Well, let me ask, Laureen. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
So, and the phone lines are open again now, 434-979-0919. But for Laureen's situation, where, you know, she's telling us what she sees, you're answering that based on what she's told you. Something may have been forgotten in that that could reduce the price. How much does it cost for Laureen to go get this double checked?
Most places are between $100 and $150 for diagnosis. That's what it's come down to, is and with what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing in the business right now in this area. I would definitely get it scanned. I'm just going by experience because, like I say, I worked on General Motors products for 9 of the last 15 years. And it's just one of those things in those particular models. What they used to do is people would complain about their battery being dead. And what you would have is you'd go out there, and as soon as you got the jump box hooked up on it, you'd hear all these motors going crazy underneath the truck. And what it was is that brain box, that ABS module, was telling all the motors to work.
They have built-in relays that stick.
And the only way to fix it, of course, most of the ones we did were all under warranty, which was fortunate for the customers. But when they go bad, it's like I say, she definitely needs to get it scanned to be sure what I'm telling her is there. But just with past experience, that's usually it. Hopefully, it might be something simple like an ABS sensor. And if that's the case, then we're talking the expense goes down to less than a fourth.
All right. Well, let's talk to Holger. Good morning.
Good morning. A couple of comments. The first one for the lady with the VW, the key issue. If she has a worn key, it can mess up this information. Apparently, if you have a factory key, it works good. If you get a copy, it can be slightly off, and that can cause some problems.
That's good to know.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing about this brake box, mine on the Chevy pickup was $500 some. So I know what they cost. So, and like you said, you don't pass inspection.
Right.
We appreciate that input, man.
Yep.
All right, thanks. Thank you. Thanks, Holger. All right, phone line is open, 434-979-0919. A perfect example of community.
It is community. It I was is, just thinking right? the same thing. Everybody's helping everybody.
That's yeah, right. That's what we're all about, man. And we only got 9 more minutes to do that. So dial us up, 434-979-0919. Steve Bullock, Rusty Sempre, 50-plus years of auto technician experience here answering your calls. So see the phone lines ringing now. So here's a quick one. Michelle from Albemarle, Mercedes C240, steering wheel shakes when she applies the brakes at low speed, but not at high speed. What's up with that?
Well, that's just at low speed?
I'm reading what I have here.
I got you.
Like John is on the line. John, hang tight
yeah,
with me.
That sounds like a definite brake pulsation at first, but I know it could be a front end loose front
this,
end
this
issue.
This is a quote from the email that she sent me. My Mercedes C240 steering wheel shakes when I apply the brakes at low speed, but not at high speed. What's up with that?
That'd be one of those things. You just have to simply drive it. I mean, it could be something as
a separated tire, because could it be ABS activating?
It could be anything without. That's something that it would have to be driven just to see what it's doing.
All right, Michelle. So let's take a call from John. Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I got a 2003 Chevy Suburban. It's a four-wheel drive 1500 series. Now, I've been really putting it off on doing the brakes, but I finally got to doing the brakes yesterday because I went to stop at a low speed, and you know, I get the normal grinding, but all of a sudden the brake pedal just went to the floor. Ooh. You know, luckily I was able to stop it and get it back home. So you know, I bought the brake pads thinking, you know, that was the problem, and I started to do the front brakes, and then I glimpsed to the back, and under the back right tire I see a whole bunch of fluid. So, you know, I went to go and inspect it real quick, and I noticed the brake line was dry, and I saw a lot of fluid from where the caliper bolts into the bracket that holds the pads, and without taking it off, you know, I don't know what more to look for as far as the repair.
It sounds like you need a caliper. It sounds like what's happened is the piston is blown out. So what I would recommend doing is don't even try to push the caliper back in. Just get another caliper and bleed the brake system out, because that, and I would strongly recommend, if you're going to do one caliper, do them both on that axle.
Okay.
I don't like to replace caliper parts in singles. I do them both at the same time when I do it.
Well, I remember I used to work at a parts store a long time ago, and we used to have caliper rebuild kits.
I wouldn't even bother with that, because by the time you go through and do all that, it's just the calipers on those things are not that expensive.
Okay, got it.
And, I mean, by the time you go through, spend the labor and doing everything on a rebuild, you could have had it on and done and driving.
Okay.
That would just be the easier and safer thing to do, honestly.
All right, John. Thanks, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
You're welcome. All right. Phone lines open again. We got, what time is it? 11:55 on the wake-up call. 5 minutes left. Take advantage of the expertise in the room, 434-979-0919. Last one that I walked in with, Carol from Charlottesville, my friend Carol, she wrote me, I have a 2001 Ford Escort four-cylinder, which is why I sent her an email saying, you need a car? You got questions about your car. And the car hesitates when either the AC or heater is on. I've already had a tune-up done, but that hasn't fixed the problem. Now my mechanic tells me I need to have my timing belt changed. Could it be something less expensive?
I doubt it's the timing belt.
That's not going to make it hesitate.
No, it's going to be...
All right, so Carol, first comment is get a new mechanic.
Well, I'm not going to say that, but...
I can.
It's the part between the license plates. That's what she needs. So. No, they're...
Those are actually decent little cars.
They are good little cars. Airflow sensor, clean.
Yeah.
Start there with
that,
mass
that's
air.
Where you'd have to start on that one. That's definitely an issue, like what they were talking about. Like, what's his face? Was it Jamie? What's his name?
Somebody called about cleaning mass airflow sensor.
That's definitely the issue.
Yes, Jamie was calling to talk about Jimmy's.
Two little screws, undo it, spray some electrical contact cleaner on it.
That would be right a placing. Yeah, that'd be a place to start on that particular model.
Weren't those also famous? Well, PCV valve. The PCV hoses
valve
used
collapse.
To collapse the hose.
They also had issues with
that. Usually made it idle real fast.
Yeah, and they
stuff,
also had the intake hose that ripped.
Yes. So vacuum leaks are clean to mass air.
All right.
Next.
We got Irene. Hey, Irene.
Hey, Rick. How you doing? It's Irene from Bacosin.
Hey, Irene. All right. Who also regularly contributes to the WNRN.
I do indeed. Always glad to hear the hometown boy on the radio, but that's not why I'm calling. I have a 2003 VW Passat, and I have a weird heating and air conditioning conflict. All summer long or all spring, if I don't have the air conditioning on, I have to close the vents, even if everything's turned off, because hot air pours out of those vents. And when I turn on the air conditioning on a hot day, it's like the heat and the air are fighting each other. I'll get cold air, and then the hot air will kick on, the cold air will kick back on, back and forth and back and forth. It almost sounds like, I don't know, being in a wind tunnel or something crazy like that. You have any idea what might be going on?
It sounds like something's going on with the blend door in the AC system, which is where the heat and the AC, they call it a blend door because it works with your with the temperature control.
Spell that for me. Blend door.
B-L-E-N-D.
And then second word, door.
Door, D-O-O-R.
Okay. There you go. All right.
Oh, okay, as in door. Okay.
Yes, and what that thing does is that when the temperature control is being switched from cold to hot, it's supposed to shut off the heater core air and let the cool air come through. And if you want it to get a little warmer, it opens up a little bit and lets warmer air into the system to start lower or raising the temperature.
Is that an electronic actuator, Stephen?
I believe it is.
Not vacuum, electronic.
It could be, yeah, it's electronic, and it could be something as simple as the gear itself is stripped. And if it is vacuum, actually, it could be something broken in the motor that is the actual vacuum motor that switches the door.
If it's electric, big expensive repair. If it's vacuum, big expensive repair.
It varies on depending on where that piece is located. If it's something where they can pull the glove box out and see it, the price should be fairly low. If it's something where they got to take the dash out, then that's when the price gets high.
You don't know for the Passats?
I have never fooled with one with that kind of an issue. I've done mostly, you know, engine and drivetrain issues with those things. They don't usually have these kind of problems that I'm aware of.
Well,
lucky you, Irene. Yay!
Well, everything that's ever gone wrong in this car has cost me a bundle, so I think I'll just live with
it. Gosh, it sounds like my dog.
if it's not otherwise imperiling the car in any way, it's just an inconvenience, I guess we'll just leave it alone.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, that'd be totally up to you. I mean, on that, me personally, I've got to have my air conditioned.
Well, the air conditioning works. It's just that it, you know, periodically, about every 5 or 10 minutes, gets into a fight with the heat.
Yeah, that may get worse. Hopefully it won't.
Yeah. Okay, good deal. Right. Well, thanks so much for your help.
Okay, you're welcome.
Irene, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. And that's going to finish us up here on the Sunday morning wake-up call. Let me take a quick moment, though, because Irene makes a regular donation, a pledge to the wake-up call. Let me remind you that the Wake Up Call is looking for a second producer for the show. If you have an interest in the program, you're available to volunteer on Sundays, and you have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. You can email me at rmoore@wnrn.org. You can stop by the station or just ring us up. Let us know. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
And thanks all the callers.
We enjoy this show.
Yes, we do.
All right. Adios. Les Temps Perdue up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong
and Max Cecilia Struther.
Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.